सरस्वती वासुदेवाय Canto 1, Chapter 18. Chapter 18 is entitled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmana Boy. Today we are reading texts 24 and 25. Ekada dhanurudyamya
Vicharan
Vigayan Mane
Vrigan
Anu Gataha Shanta
Strishito
Vrisham
Jalashayam Achakshana
Avivesatam Ashramam
Dadarsham
Munim
Asina
Shantam Milita Lochanam Ekada. Once upon a time. Tanu. Arrows and bow. Udyamya. Taking firmly, Vicharan, following, Mrigayam, hunting excursion, Vane, in the forest, Mrigan, stags, Anugata, while following, Shranta, fatigued, Shudita, hungry, Krishita, being thirsty, Risham, extremely, Jala Ashayam, reservoir of water, Achakshana, while searching for, Ravi Vesha, entered into, Tam, that famous, Ashramam, hermitage of Shamika Rishi, Tadarsha, saw, Muni, the sage, Asinam, seated, Shantam, all silent, Milita, closed, Lochanam, eyes. Translation and purport by Prabhupada. Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. Purport. The Supreme Lord is so kind to his pure devotees that in proper time he calls such devotees up to him and thus creates an auspicious circumstance for the devotee. Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to be extremely fatigued, hungry and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. But by the desire of the Lord, even such a devotee can become apparently fatigued and thirsty, just to create such a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. The Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee, even though he may be engaged in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation, and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. The devotee can understand by the signal of the rod, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. Maharaj Parikshit was to become the medium for the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Sri Krishna, as his grandfather Arjuna was the medium for the Bhagavad Gita. Had Arjuna not been taken up with an illusion of family affection by the will of the Lord, the Bhagavad Gita would not have been spoken by the Lord himself for the good of all concerned. Similarly, had Maharaj Parikshit not been fatigued, hungry and thirsty at this time, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, the prime authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a prelude to the circumstances under which Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken for the benefit of all concerned. The prelude therefore begins with the words, once upon a time. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स पदान्तिकम्. मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम चैप्टर 18 विच इज एंटाइटल्ड परीक्षित फर्स्ट बाय अ ब्राह्मणा बॉय. And prior to these verses, in the previous verses, there was a conversation going on between Sutta Goswami and the sages of Naimisharanya. And the sages of Naimisharanya were actually glorifying Sutta Goswami in the previous verses. They were glorifying Sutta Goswami's position. They were glorifying Sukhadeva Goswami's position. How Sukhadeva Goswami renounced his worldly attachments. How he gave up his kingdom and just sat down to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And also they glorified the benefits of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And in yesterday's verse, we saw that Sutta Goswami, who is actually very humble, because in the verse before that he says that, I'm a very lowly born person. So he says, I was not born in a very high caste Brahmana society. However, immediately he says in that verse, that even though one is not born in a high class Brahmana society, one can still become qualified if one follows in the footsteps of the acharyas. One simply has to take to the way the acharya has prescribed, and in that way one can make the highest qualification for oneself. And in the previous verse, Sutta Goswami glorifies the unlimited pastimes of the Lord. So Sutta Goswami mentioned in yesterday's verse that the pastimes of the Lord are like the sky. They are unlimited. And as a bird, when it flies in the sky, it can only reach or span the sky as much as its wings allow. So similarly, we devotees can access or can glorify the pastimes of the Lord as much as our realization allows. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport over there that the Lord, it is only the Lord who can describe himself fully. Nobody else can describe the Lord fully. But we can describe the Lord as much as the Lord empowers us to describe. That is what Prabhupada describes in the previous verse. And from today's verse, the actual pastime has started. When Sutta Goswami starts narrating how Maharaj Parikshit will get cursed by this Brahmana boy. So in today's verse, we see that Parikshit Maharaj is out hunting. And as we know from the scriptures, even in Mahabharata we've read and even in Ramayana we've read that Kshatriyas are allowed to hunt animals in the forest because they have to hone their hunting skills. They have to hone their shooting skills. They have to hone their targeting skills and all. So they are allowed to hunt animals in the forest. So in the same way, Parikshit Maharaj was also out hunting. And by the will of the Lord, he became fatigued. And he was extremely hungry and thirsty after he was chasing some stags. And in that situation, he started searching for a reservoir of water. And then he saw a hermitage which belonged to the famous Shamika Rishi. And he entered the hermitage where the sage was sitting with his eyes half closed, as if in meditation. So this is the situation now which has started from this verse. And we see from this section of Bhagavatam, like from today's verse, once again the Bhagavatam is coming up with the Lord's Bhakta Vatsala quality. So time and again in the Bhagavatam we have seen, like when the Pandavas, when Ashwatthama releases the Brahmastra, how the Lord protects the Pandavas, how the Lord protects Parikshit Maharaj himself. So every time the Lord's Bhakta Vatsala feature is repeatedly glorified by the Bhagavatam. And even here, actually the Bhakta Vatsala feature of the Lord is coming out. So Prabhupada answers this in the purport. He says that the Lord lovingly creates situations for his devotees by which the devotees can go back to the Lord, by which the devotees can give up everything, whatever worldly, so-called worldly affairs they are engaged in, and they can go back to the Lord. So whether it's an awkward situation which the Lord may create or a pleasant or auspicious situation the Lord may create. But the devotees like Parikshit Maharaj, they immediately grab hold or they immediately take opportunity or advantage of these situations to renounce their worldly attachments and go back to the Lord. So actually Prabhupada says that how is it that Parikshit Maharaj can get fatigued and hungry and thirsty? Because Parikshit Maharaj, like pure devotees like Parikshit Maharaj, are not on the bodily platform of life. So for them, there is nothing like fatigue or hunger or thirst. Then why is it that in this situation he has become like that? And we will see the same Parikshit Maharaj very soon. Now, you know, after the Brahmin boy curses Parikshit Maharaj and the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is about to be spoken, he decides to go to the Ganges and he decides to fast for 7 days and nights just because he wants to be absorbed in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention. So the same Parikshit Maharaj can stay without food and water for 7 days and nights. But now it seems that he has become fatigued and he is very hungry and thirsty. So we can see that this is just the Lord's plan for Parikshit Maharaj. So we can see the Lord's hand clearly that he has created this difficult situation for Parikshit Maharaj. But one thing is there about the Lord, that he will create these situations only for his pure devotees. The Lord will not create these situations for devotees who are not as surrendered to the Lord as Parikshit Maharaj. Why? Because these devotees who are not yet surrendered, who are still on the neophyte stage, they may not be able to see the hand of the Lord. They might become frustrated and bogged down when a difficult situation comes in their life. But Parikshit Maharaj was not like that. Parikshit Maharaj did not get bogged down or frustrated when he was cursed by the Brahmin boy. So we see this in Prabhupada's life also. Burijan Prabhu mentions actually this example in his commentary on the Bhagavatam, unveiling his lotus feet. He mentions that Prabhupada had a life-threatening heart attack in 1968. And ISKCON was actually a very fledgling society. It had just been set up in 1967 and they were just expanding. It was not still big. And Prabhupada had this life-threatening heart attack. And Prabhupada writes in a letter to one of his disciples who was asking about his heart attack. He compares his situation to that of Prahlad Maharaj. So he says that when this Hiranyakashipu or this Maya attacks one, like Hiranyakashipu repeatedly attacked Prahlad Maharaj. However, Prahlad Maharaj was saved in each and every situation by the grace of the Lord. So Prabhupada was comparing his situation like that. He said that Maya might have attacked me, but I have been saved by the grace of the Lord. And in the same letter, Prabhupada quotes Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. He says that Krishna has promised Arjuna, Kaunteya prati janati name bhakta pranashyati, that my devotee will never get vanquished. So Prabhupada mentions that sometimes such situations may come in our life which might be very difficult to understand. And we might take time to understand what the plan of the Lord is in creating this situation. However, please remember that the devotee of the Lord is never vanquished, whatever situation may come in life. This is what Prabhupada says in that letter. And later on Prabhupada explains when he meets his disciples. He explains that this heart attack had been brought upon him only because Krishna wanted to increase the attachment of his disciples for Prabhupada. Because as soon as the news spread from New York to San Francisco, wherever the center, and I think Montreal also, there was a center which was just being set up. Immediately the devotees, the disciples of Prabhupada started praying. They did non-stop 12-hour kirtan and non-stop 12-hour chanting. So all of them were intently praying to Krishna that our spiritual master has just started this society, please don't take him away. Like that, all these disciples intently prayed. And Prabhupada explains that maybe Krishna wanted to increase the attachment of the disciples for their guru. And that is why this whole situation had been created of this life-threatening heart attack. So this is the greatness of the devotees of the Lord, that all they are always ready to follow the Lord's plan. So even though it might be a heart attack, or it might be a situation where Parikshit Maharaj is fatigued and he is hungry and thirsty, still devotees don't get bogged down. They are always ready to follow the Lord's plan, even though it might be frustrating, even though it might be very hard to execute such a plan of the Lord, or even though it might make the devotees look as fools, or it might humiliate them in front of others, still devotees are ready to follow the plan of the Lord. And there are many examples of great devotees like this who followed the plans of the Lord. And one such example Prabhupada mentions in the purport itself, who is the grandfather of Parikshit Maharaj, Arjuna. So Prabhupada says that Arjuna became so called, he became apparently illusioned by his attachment to his family members. But Prabhupada mentions that why did this happen to Arjuna? Because we know from the Mahabharata that the same Arjuna was extremely detached. Actually, there is a pastime in the Mahabharata where when all the five Pandavas marry Draupadi and come back, they take a vow, like they have an understanding among themselves that whenever one of the Pandavas is alone with Draupadi, no other Pandava should enter that place. So that was like an understanding between them. And if anybody enters that place, then that person should go away for 1 year. They should go away on pilgrimage or go and stay in the forest for 1 year. So once Yudhishthir Maharaj was with Draupadi alone, and there was somebody who was under attack, I think some Brahmins were under attack, and Arjun had to save them. And to get the weapons to save these people who were under attack, he had to pass through the chamber where Yudhishthir Maharaj and Draupadi were sitting, because the weapons were on the other side. So he actually goes, because Kshatriya's duty is to protect. So he actually rushes through the chamber where Yudhishthir and Draupadi were sitting. He gets the weapons and he fights with the attackers and he drives them away. But after that, he tells Yudhishthir Maharaj that I broke the understanding, or I broke the vow which we all had agreed upon, that no one will enter when one of us is alone with Draupadi. So now I'm going to go away for 1 year. And actually Yudhishthir Maharaj begs Arjuna. He says that no, you did not violate that rule out of, you know, intentionally. You were trying to protect someone. You are trying to do your duty as a Kshatriya, and therefore you violated. You just came in to get the weapons. So please don't go. They beg him. But Arjuna was so fixed on that vow that he immediately left the kingdom, all his family members, and he went away to the forest for 1 year for a pilgrimage. So this same Arjuna, who is so detached on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he has actually come under that illusion of being attached to his family members, and he does not want to fight. So we see that this is clearly a plan of the Lord, because the Lord wanted to use Arjuna to achieve a higher objective. He wanted to use Arjuna as a medium so that he could speak the Bhagavad Gita. And actually he tells Arjuna, because Arjuna had this so-called mundane idea that, oh, I want to be non-violent. It is better to go to the forest and beg rather than kill your own family members. So he had these mundane morality principles in his mind of non-violence. And we see Krishna is actually telling Arjuna, you please give up your idea of non-violence and you fight. So Krishna is asking Arjuna to commit violence and give up his idea of non-violence. And it seems like a strange thing for people who don't understand, or people who don't read Prabhupada's purports. And I read somewhere that there is a society in America which is called the Quakers Society. And these are one of the earliest Christian sects which came to America. And they are very pakka, like very devout Christians. And some, most of them are pacifists. Pacifist means they are completely adhering to the principle of non-violence. Very, very strict about that principle of non-violence. So once I read one of the sannyasis in ISKCON, he met one of the priests of this Quaker society. And this Quaker society priest told this sannyasi, he said that, oh, I do not believe in your society. I do not believe in this ISKCON. Because your entire society is based on Bhagavad Gita and on Lord Krishna. And he says that because Lord Krishna, we don't believe in your society and even in the Bhagavad Gita, because Lord Krishna actually told Arjuna to commit violence. How is that possible that your Lord, on whom the entire society is based, is actually asking to commit violence? Because we are a completely non-violent society, so therefore we do not adhere to your teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore we reject your society and your Lord Krishna. So this is what this priest from the Quaker society explained to this sannyasi. And then this sannyasi explained that, you know, actually Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and the dharma of a Kshatriya is to protect people and to protect religion, and Arjuna was actually just doing his duty of protecting people. And then this sannyasi explained the situation from Krishna's point of view. He said that there were so many attempts made to have peace so that this fight doesn't happen, but it ultimately did not happen. They had to fight because nobody was listening to their peace messages. And still he saw that the priest was not convinced. So then the sannyasi challenged, because the priest was sitting with lots of his disciples. And there was one lady disciple of the priest who was maybe 20, 22 years old. And the sannyasi told that, for example, today someone comes and molests your disciple, and someone tries to sexually molest, and very violently that person is molesting your disciple. You can see that only violence is the only way to stop that person from molesting your disciple. Will you use violence or no, just to protect your disciple? And the priest actually said no. He said no, I completely adhere to the principle of non-violence, and I would never break that principle under any circumstance.
And again the sannyasi said, he said, what if that is the only way, getting physical and getting violent is the only way to stop the chastity of your disciple being molested, or to stop your disciple being sexually hurt? And this priest again and again reiterated the point. He said, no, I will never break my principle of non-violence. And the disciple actually got scared about whom the sannyasi was talking, this lady disciple. She started looking at the guru, at that priest, you know, with an expression that you won't do anything to protect me. You'll allow me to get sexually molested. And the guru said, yes, I have to adhere to the principle of non-violence, and therefore I cannot do anything to protect you. Because keeping up that principle of non-violence is more important than anything else. This is what the priest claimed. And all the disciples were like, you know, thinking that the priest has gone crazy. That if this lady has to be protected, obviously we have to resort to violence. So then the sannyasi was explaining. He was saying that actually this himsa, ahimsa, or violence and non-violence are actually mundane morality principles. But according to the will of the Lord, they can become transcendental principles. So for example, Arjuna's act of violence is actually the highest level of non-violence which Arjuna did. Because he was going according, or he was acting according to the will of the Lord. He was only adhering to the plan of the Lord. So we see that the point is that, you know, because we are following, somebody follows their own plans. And what are these own plans? The own plans which are dictated by your own mind. Because if you are not following the plan of the Lord and you are not following the scriptures, that means, then you are just dictated by your own fallible mind. And we see that in this priest's case from the Quaker society, he was just dictated by his own fallible mind. Even Bhagavatam says, the fifth canto of Bhagavatam says, Yasyati bhakti bhagavati akinchana, sarve gunes tatra samaseta suraha. Harau abhaktasya kutho mahadguna, manorathena sati dhavato bahi. So it says that harau abhaktas kutho mahadguna, that the devotees, non-devotees of the Lord, who are not surrendered to the Lord at all, what good qualities they will have. And Prabhupada explains that even if these non-devotees are so-called mystic yogis, or even if they are very good in their family, like they are looking after their family dharma very nicely, they are looking after their so-called occupational duties very nicely, but even then, if they are not surrendered to the Lord, they will not have any good qualities. Why? Because manorathena sati dhavato bhavi. Because they are simply running on the chariot of their mind. And all their moralities and all their principles are simply based on their own mind. And they are not based on the instructions of the Lord. So we see this in this Quaker priest, this Quaker society priest. His principles were just based on his own mind. They were not based on the Lord's scriptures. And therefore he was rejecting, just to adhere to his so-called morality principle of non-violence, he was rejecting Lord Krishna and he was rejecting the society which was based on Bhagavad Gita. So same situation is with Parikshit Maharaj. Just as Arjuna agreed to be illusion so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, Parikshit Maharaj agreed to be fatigued, hungry and thirsty, and after that getting angry and envious of the sage and putting that snake garland around him. Parikshit Maharaj agreed to do all this just so that the Bhagavatam can be spoken. Just so that the Lord can use him as a medium for the Bhagavatam to be revealed to the entire world, for the good of the entire world. Of course, Jiva Goswami also mentions that the Lord had other plans as well. The Lord actually wanted Parikshit Maharaj to become detached, because Parikshit Maharaj was the emperor of the world. So, you know, being the emperor, he was completely involved in running his kingdom and seeing to the welfare of the earth. And Krishna wanted actually Parikshit Maharaj to become detached. That was one more plan. And Krishna wanted Parikshit Maharaj, who was his pure devotee, to come back to him. And Parikshit Maharaj also knew that unless he gives up his kingdom and unless he leaves this world, Kali Yuga cannot start. Because Kali personified was extremely scared of Parikshit Maharaj. And it could not spread its veils in the world, because Parikshit Maharaj was ruling. So Parikshit Maharaj knew that the time cycle has to go on. It has been set by the Lord. So Dwapar Yuga has to end, Kali Yuga has to begin. So he knew, but till he is there, Kali Yuga won't start. So that was one more reason Parikshit Maharaj agreed to leave the world. And Parikshit Maharaj knew one more higher principle. He knew Kaler Dosha Nidhe Rajan Asti Meheko Mahan Guna Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangam Param Rajit. He knew that only Kali Yuga, in Kali Yuga, by chanting, simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord, one can get liberation. So he knew this is the glory of Kali Yuga, even though it's full of faults, all the four regulative principles will be broken, there will be so much vice, quarrel, hypocrisy. But he knew that this is the greatest quality of Kali Yuga, and therefore he wanted a Kali Yuga to start, and he agreed to leave the world and become an instrument in the Lord's plan. So we see similarly Parikshit Maharaj and Arjuna, these are all empowered devotees of the Lord. And why they are empowered is because they have surrendered to the plans of the Lord. They do not have any separate interest in their heart apart from satisfying the interest of the Lord. And only when the Lord sees that there is no separate interest in the heart of the devotee, then the Lord empowers such a devotee to achieve great objectives. But even if there is a small trace of separate interest from the interest of the Lord, then the Lord will not empower us. So till we harbor these separate interests in our heart, we are not allowing the Lord to use us as instruments to achieve whatever and to achieve great objectives which the Lord might have in His mind. So we are only stopping, but you know, devotees like Parikshit Maharaj and Arjuna, they were completely aligned with the plan of the Lord. And therefore the Lord could achieve great things using these devotees as a medium. And in Prabhupada's life also we see, when Prabhupada was traveling on the Jaladuta, he wrote that beautiful poem, Markine Bhagavat. And in that Prabhupada writes that, O my Lord, you please use me as a puppet. I have no qualification, I have no words to speak. You make my words suitable for the understanding of this Western audience. And you use me as a puppet and make me dance as you want. So Prabhupada was completely aligning with the plan of the Lord. He did not have any plans of his own. He just wanted to go there as an instrument of the Lord's mercy and carry the compassion of the Lord to the suffering souls of Kali Yuga in the Western countries. And he actually prays to the Lord like that in his poem. And we also see there is a great pastime to show that how the Lord empowers devotees who follow his plan. This is from the South Indian scriptures. There was an Alwar called Vishnu Chittar. Now Alwars are actually, they all came in the... I think they all came before Adi Shankaracharya. They were all pure devotees of the Lord. They were actually incarnations of the Lord, Shankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma, all these things. So they are all pure devotees of the Lord and they have incarnated as devotees in South India. And one of these Alwars was Vishnu Chittar. His name was also Periya Alwar. So this Vishnu Chittar is actually said to be an incarnation of Sudama, who was the Malakara. Malakara means who used to make garlands in Mathura. When Krishna and Balaram and all the cowherd boys visited Mathura, Sudama was the one who used to make garlands, and he was the one who offered this beautiful garland to Krishna and Balaram when Krishna and Balaram were passing through Mathura. So this Vishnu Chittar is actually an incarnation of this Sudama. And even in this incarnation as Vishnu Chittar, he was also still a Malakara. He was a garland maker. So his only service was to make garlands for the Lord. And he was completely illiterate. He had never read the scriptures. He did not know anything, but he was a pure devotee. And he was so absorbed in his service of making garlands for the Lord that service used to give him the greatest satisfaction. And once what happened was, the Lord came in this Vishnu Chittar's dream. So what had happened? The king in the state in which Vishnu Chittar used to live, this king had organized a debate. And he had invited all the scholars from various states and various regions to come and debate on some spiritual topic. And the Lord came in Vishnu Chittar's dream. And he told Vishnu Chittar that you go and debate in this debate which the king has organized 2 days later. And Vishnu Chittar got scared. He said, my Lord, I'm an illiterate person. I've never read any scriptures. I don't know any philosophy. What will I speak in this debate? That too, big pundits and scholars are coming. What am I going to do there? And the Lord said, no, you just listen to me. You go to the debate. I will take care of the rest. And Vishnu Chittar, although was very scared, he thought that, okay, if this is the Lord's plan, I must go to the debate. And the king had actually tied a gift on his ceiling, on the roof. And he said, whoever wins this debate, this gift will be given to that person. So when Vishnu Chittar also entered the assembly, he was totally petrified because he saw there were big scholars and pundits who had come from all over the country to participate in this debate. And then when Vishnu Chittar's turn came, he was absolutely not aware what he's going to speak. But as soon as he opened his mouth, eloquent words started flowing from his mouth. And we see this in Dhruva Maharaj's pastime also. When Dhruva Maharaj was meditating and the Lord gives him darshan, it is mentioned that Dhruva Maharaj was only a 5-year-old boy. He did not know how to offer prayers to the Lord. What will a 5-year-old child know? So he did not know what to say to the Lord. He suddenly saw the Lord and he was so overwhelmed with ecstasy that he did not know what to speak, and he actually had no knowledge also. So the Lord actually blesses Dhruva Maharaj with his conch shell. And as soon as the conch shell touches Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj is able to speak eloquent prayers for the Lord. So similarly in this pastime, the moment Vishnu Chittar opened his mouth, there were beautiful verses that started flowing. Very high philosophy started coming out of his mouth. And it was very evident that he had defeated all the scholars in that assembly. And the king himself was surprised. Everyone realized that, oh, this is a great person who has come over here to debate. And as soon as he finished speaking, the gift which was hanging from the ceiling, from the roof, it actually fell in Vishnu Chittar's lap. So claiming that, okay, this is the winner, the gift automatically came to him. The king did not even have to give the gift to him. So Vishnu Chittar realized that, see how this was the plan of the Lord. I did not know anything. I simply agreed to come because the Lord wanted me to. And the Lord has only spoken. Because I am completely illiterate. What philosophy I know? So it is the Lord who has spoken through my mouth. And you know, tears were flowing from his eyes when he saw what the Lord had done, using him as an instrument. And then the king arranged for a big palanquin for this Vishnu Chittar, because he wanted to, like in the olden days, they would honor all these winners by taking them around on a palanquin, on a decorated elephant. They would take them around the entire state with kettle drums and all that. That, oh, he's the winner of the debate. So they actually seated Vishnu Chittar on a palanquin and they started taking him around. And as soon as he came out, he saw that all the demigods were standing in the sky, showering flowers on him. And then Vishnu had personally come on Garuda to give blessings or to give his darshan actually to Vishnu Chittar. And Vishnu Chittar looked up and saw that the Lord has come. And Vishnu Chittar actually blessed the Lord that, oh, may you live long. So Vishnu Chittar was actually in a parental bhava. He was in Vatsalya Rasa with the Lord. So he actually blessed the Lord, oh, may you live long, because he was looking at the Lord as his child. And then he was taken on a procession all over the village. So we see from this pastime that just because he aligned and he agreed to follow the plan of the Lord empowered him to achieve some high objective. Because the Lord wanted to establish that only my devotees can actually be true winners of all these spiritual debates and not these so-called scholars and pundits. We also see the example of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma, I think it's in the third canto, when Lord Brahma does the creation, he also creates his own daughter whose name was Vak. And Vak means sweet speech. So as soon as Vak was born, Lord Brahma was overcome by a very great sexual desire. And he actually started chasing his own daughter to satisfy this desire. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that all the Brahma had 10 sages who had already been born before that. And they were high sages, very renowned. And they all started thinking, what is a father doing? Because, you know, the father has to be actually a good example for the sons. And Brahma was running behind this Vak, and all the sages were completely perplexed that, what is a father doing? Please stop, please stop. They were trying to tell Brahma. But Brahma was so much overcome by lusty desire that he kept running behind Vak. And then, of course, ultimately he realized that he gave up that conception. So we see that Brahma is actually the most intelligent being in the whole universe. And the Vedas were already spoken to Brahma in his heart by Krishna. The Vedas were revealed to Brahma in his heart, and he was given the intelligence directly by the Lord how to create this universe. So Brahma is such an empowered being, still he agreed to be humiliated because he knew this is the Lord's plan. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, Prabhupada mentions over there that Brahma is actually no ordinary being. So whoever laughs or whoever thinks of this situation that, oh, Brahma got bewildered or Brahma fell down because he was lusting after his own daughter, he said he will be committing an apradh. Because Lord Brahma is an empowered being, he was actually just allowing himself to be used as an example so that the Lord could establish how dangerous this sexual relationship is, or how dangerous sex life is. That even if Brahma can fall down, what about us? What do we have to learn from this situation? All of us can definitely fall down. That's what Prabhupada says is the moral, or is what we have to learn. So he says that Brahma was just allowing himself to be used by the Lord. So Brahma did not mind being humiliated, being laughing stock in front of all his sons, or being mentioned in the Bhagavatam forever that he actually ran behind his daughter to satisfy his sex desire. Brahma did not mind being in this position because he knew the Lord was trying to achieve something by his example or using him as an example. And one more very good example where, you know, devotees aligned to the plan of the Lord is the Brahmana's wives. So we know from the pastime of from Krishna book that there were Brahmins who were doing some yajnas, and Krishna and Balram were in a nearby forest and they were extremely hungry. So they send their friends, oh please go and get some food. There are some Brahmins who are doing yajnas. They have cooked very very nice foodstuffs. So they send their friends, you go and get these foodstuffs for us and come. And when the cowherd friends come and ask the Brahmins that, oh Brahmins, Krishna and Balram are hungry. They are in the forest nearby. Please give some food for them. The Brahmins don't even answer them. You know, actually, if somebody says no, at least they have acknowledged your presence. The Brahmins don't even acknowledge the presence of the cowherd boys. They completely ignore them. Why? Because they were so engrossed in performing their yajnic duties or performing the ritualistic ceremonies. So the boys come back disappointed to Krishna Balram. And then Krishna Balram sent them again. And they said that this time you go to the Brahmin's wives, the Brahmin patnis, and you ask them for the food and you see what reaction you will get. So the boys again came back, and this time they just ignored the Brahmins and they went to the patnis who were sitting inside the houses. And they said, oh my dear Brahmin's wives, Krishna and Balaram are in the forest and they are so hungry. Please give some food for them. And as soon as the Brahmin's wives heard that Krishna and Balaram are there and they are hungry, they did not bother about anything. They did not bother to wait for the offerings to get over. When the yajna gets over, then the offering is done of the food. They did not worry about all that. They simply collected all the foodstuffs and they ran towards the forest. Even though their husbands were stopping them, many of the husbands, fathers, brothers, they were all stopping these ladies that don't go, still the ceremonies are going on, still the sacrifice is going on. But these ladies completely ignored. Because they were aligning with the plan of the Lord. They did not want to use their own plans, or they did not want to follow their own plans. That, oh, first ritualistic ceremonies, ignore Krishna and Balaram, what is there? First we have to finish our sacrifices. No, they completely ignored all those actually mundane concepts and they ran to satisfy. Vedeshta sarvar aham eva vedyo. They ran to satisfy Krishna, who is actually to be known by all these Vedas and all these ritualistic ceremonies. So we see that when we give up our own plans, we give up our own plans for mundane morality, we give up our own plans of, you know, progressing in life, thinking that we will advance like this, and we surrender to Krishna's plans, then we can become great instruments in the hands of the Lord. And we see this in the life of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami also. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was born to Tapan Mishra, and I think his wife's name was Chandravali. They were great devotees of the Lord. And in fact, when the Lord, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was born, the Lord was there and they had distributed sweets and fed the Lord very sumptuously, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very sumptuously. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami actually, when he grew big, he wanted to surrender to the Lord. And he actually went and stayed with the Lord in Puri for 8 months. But after that, the Lord sent him back. The Lord told him, no, you must go and serve your aging parents. They are my great devotees and Vaishnava should never be neglected. So you please go and serve them, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him. And when you finish serving them, you can come back to me. So then Raghunath Bhatta Goswami completely followed the Lord's orders. He immediately went and he just spent his whole time in studying the scriptures and looking after the parents. He used to continuously recite the Srimad Bhagavatam to his parents. And in this way, he ensured that his parents are delivered at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after his parents left their bodies, then Raghunath, and the Lord also told him, never marry, because then there will be one more attachment which will come. So as soon as the parents left, then Raghunath Bhatta Goswami did not have any more family attachments. So then he immediately left. Again he went to Puri and he surrendered to the Lord. And this time again the Lord allowed him to serve him, but only for 8 months. After 8 months were over, the Lord again told him that, oh Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, I want you to go to Vrindavan. And I want you to assist Rupa and Sanatana Goswami in excavating all the holy places of the Lord. And actually Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's heart was broken. Because after such a long time, he, on following the Lord's instructions, he went and served his parents for so many years. And with great difficulty he was with the Lord only for 8 months. And again the Lord is asking him to go away. So his heart was completely broken because he could not bear separation from the Lord. So he begs the Lord, "Oh my Lord, please don't send me away from your physical association." And the Lord says that actually I would myself love to go to Vrindavan and do this work of discovering Krishna's pastime places. But because my mother has ordered me to stay in Puri, that is why I am staying in Jagannath Puri. But you please go and assist Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And then Raghunath Bhatta Goswami immediately surrendered. He did not keep his own plans. Oh, I have just come after such a long time of serving my parents. I have hardly been here for a few months and again the Lord is sending me off. What is this? This is injustice. No. He immediately surrendered to the plan of the Lord and he went away to Vrindavan to just fulfill the Lord's desire and assist Sarupa and Sanatan Goswami in whatever the Lord wanted to achieve. So we see as soon as we surrender to the plan of the Lord empowers us to achieve whatever big tasks that the Lord has in mind. Whether it is opening big temples or whether it is bringing some souls into Krishna consciousness or whether it is dressing the deities nicely. In some way or the other, the Lord will empower us to achieve great tasks. We simply have to pray to the Lord that please use me as an instrument of your mercy. And then the Lord, seeing the sincerity, will empower us accordingly. So we'll end here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments.
In big important decisions or situations, we take guidance to know what the will of Krishna is. But in daily, everyday decisions, how do we know what's Krishna's will and what's our will? How do we differentiate?
I remember one. Mataji is asking that when we have to take big decisions in life, then we usually take guidance. But when there are day-to-day decisions, like smaller decisions, then how do we decide what is Krishna's will and what is our will? So I remember once somebody had asked this question to Devamrit Maharaj. We are only in Melbourne. And Devamrit Maharaj was saying that is why we live in a society of devotees. And we always keep ourselves surrounded by devotees. And not only staying surrounded by devotees, but being isolated, like being in our old world. He said that we actually strive to have very good relationships with devotees, so that the devotees are pleased with us, and then he said that then it's dadati prati granati. So we reveal our mind in confidence and they also reveal their mind in confidence to us. So these then mutual exchanges allow us to deal with these, you know, day-to-day small decisions which have to be taken. Because we are surrounded by devotees, and the devotees are always there to help us to sort out whether we are, you know, manorathena, whether we are riding on the chariot of our own mind or whether we are actually following Krishna's plans. And that is why it's so important to stay in the association of devotees and to have loving relationships with devotees, so that the devotees can then guide us when we are confused as to what is Krishna's plan and what is my will in this. I'll ask Anirudh Prabhu if he wants to add something.
Sometimes you just have to make a decision that you may not know. Yeah. I'm just thinking that on Sankirtan, you going out on Sankirtan, and we used to go into a lot of factories to sell paraphernalia, and you'd be tossing up, what do? I go in the front door and get kicked out, or I go in the back door and get kicked out? Because, you know, often you go in the front door and say, hey, you can't come here. But then you can go in the back door, and then the people in the back will let you in, and then eventually you get to the front, and then they kick you out. So how to work out what's Krishna's plan? Sometimes you've got to, you know, you don't know. You've got to just trust your own judgment.
Instincts, and yeah.
And you may make a mistake.
Yeah.
But it's all part of the excitement, the challenge of being a Sankirtan devotee.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
What are you going to do? Krishna, what am I going to do? Well, I walk up the left hand side of the road or the right hand side of the road. There's some things you've just got to use.
Yeah, your own intelligence.
Common sense.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a rare commodity.
On the same point, Ramadhan is asking, can we say that if we follow this spiritual master, then we know Krishna's plan?
Good point. Anything else?
your own question. I don't think I'm qualified to answer your question. You are much more realized than me in these matters, Roji. From what Prabhupada, like I was mentioning in the earlier part of the lecture, like when Prabhupada had that life-threatening heart attack, he mentioned that sometimes Maya will attack us like this, and it is very difficult to understand what is the plan of the Lord when we are in some difficult situations in our life. For example, our own health is not good, or the health of near and dear ones is bad, or we saw, you know, in the recent months, some devotee meets with an accident which was quite life-threatening. They are such nice devotees in the congregation. So when we see these setbacks, so Prabhupada says that sometimes we may think that Maya or this Hiranyakashipu is really attacking us, and it's very hard to understand. But as Prabhupada says, that slowly, you know, with, as you said, with intelligence and with guidance from senior devotees, we can understand that the Lord always has a plan behind every activity, whether it was our own karmic reaction or whether it was the plan of the Lord. But there is always a plan of the Lord. And also we know that when we are chanting 16 rounds, then we are not under the shelter of Maya, then we are under Krishna's protection. So whatever is happening to us is not completely karmic reaction or what the full force of karma that we should have got, but it is that, you know, cushioned karma, whatever effect that we are getting, because Krishna wants us to get that effect. But still it's very cushioned, because we are directly under Krishna's protection, because we are all chanting 16 rounds and following Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada says that it might take some time to understand what is the plan of the Lord, and we might feel for that time being very frustrated that why Krishna has put me in this situation. But the devotees have to always remember that the devotees of the Lord are never vanquished. The Lord never allows his devotees to fail. Maybe it might take some time to understand, oh, this was Krishna's plan to me, but at the end there is always something which Krishna was trying to achieve, even through the unfortunate situation. That's what my understanding is. So we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.